welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. Maggie O'Neill is a leading academic researcher in criminology and sociology. Walking is a key element of her ethnographic research into the lives of asylum seekers, the homeless, refugees and sex workers in England's northern cities. A recent recipient of a Leverhulme scholarship, she invited those she had encountered through her research to walk with her along and across borders of significance in their lives. I caught up with Maggie on a brief visit of hers to London. Just as we set out for a walk, the heavens opened and we sought shelter, so the interview took place in a crowded hotel lobby.
Come down today to London, for what purpose?
Well, I've come to London for three things, really. I'm doing some research looking at the experience of migrant mothers using walking and theatre-based methods. So I've been interviewing migrant mothers, but at the same time I've been doing a class at Birkbeck on sex work and social censure. And today I'm speaking at the Birkbeck Research Seminar Series on walking borders.
Okay, and that's really what we're doing this interview about. And really, we ought to be walking outside, but it's pelting with rain. It's a cold March day, so we've snuck inside a fancy hotel. You've been a researcher and academic all your life, or most of your life?
Yeah, no, all of my life, actually. Yeah. Well, you know, since I finished university. So my first empirical research contract was in 1989.
Have you always had an interest in walking as a methodology for research, or have you always had an interest in borders and boundaries?
Well, borders and boundaries is, I guess, embedded in my biography, in my own biography, in my history. My family were Irish migrants at the turn of the century. I've always had an interest in people's life stories and people's biographies, really, people's journeys. Walking, I'm an ethnographer, so I do research in and with communities, and all of my research, pretty much 99%, is participatory. But I also, as a student, and actually before being a student, you know, was, I guess, influenced by art and artists, but also felt quite strongly the liberating, transformative potential of art. But also I think it's potentially quite impactful in terms of reaching people, changing hearts and minds, but also impacting on policy and practice as well.
Now, we're not actually walking, so we're sort of eyeballing each other. Both you and I know actually makes one feel a bit more defensive.
Yeah, absolutely.
But walking has this fantastic thing that you walk beside someone and you're looking forward and sharing a journey. But, I mean, I know you've researched this before, haven't you, about how profound walking can be. Could you try and talk a little bit about that?
Well, as I said, you know, walking is part of our everyday life, but also, so social scientists who use walking as part of their practice and who write about walking, so people like Tim Edensor, who's a sociologist, ethnographer, and then the fabulous women walking artists that I've connected with. Misha Myers was a huge inspiration. I met her at a conference and thought, this is incredible, you know, sort of using walking as part of her performative practice.
And she's done a lot of research around migrants and walking too.
So. But that project was inspirational and led to us working together and me inviting Misha to be a consultant on work that I was doing in the East Midlands with my asylum seekers and refugees. And we led a simultaneous walk in four cities in the region, pairing asylum seekers and refugees with policymakers or citizens. And then Misha was consultant and she also chaired the sort of feedback session where we all came together afterwards to talk about our experiences.
Did you get migrants to walk with stakeholders?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And coming back to your point about the mobile nature of walking, the movement, walking side by side, the way that walking sort of opens up a space for dialogue, which minimises the power relations that are absolutely present when you're sitting interviewing somebody, and particularly if you're an academic researcher and you're interviewing a migrant. So the walking side by side is incredibly, you know, it opens a space. It opens a space for more reflective conversation and also, you know, being in tune and I guess attuning to another person shifts that power balance, and so it's more of a dialogic subject-subject relational. And so I thought, you know, it was really important for us to take the work out of the research frame And how can we connect this work with policymakers to get them to think and feel and experience what it is to be an asylum seeker, a migrant in Nottingham, Derby, Loughborough, Nottingham? And yes, that's what we did. It was a great experience. It was a great experience to work with Mission.
Coming back to Walking Borders, mm-hmm. What's Walking Borders really about?
So the Walking Borders is a project funded by the Levy Hume Trust. Funding is now over, but the project continues because I have more walks lined up and I'm working on walks currently. Really emerged out of more than a decade of work with asylum seeker refugee artists, communities where people were dispersed or making their home. I experienced in walking with people, you know, the notion of borders are not just those material geographical borders.
So how did you choose the borders and which borders they were and whose borders are they?
Absolutely. People chose to take me on a walk. So they chose to take me on a walk that they wanted to share. That said something about borders.
How did they select themselves? How did they come forward to you?
Well, they came forward through previous projects, so knowing them and, you know, wanting to connect back with them, or, you know, being interested in their work and asking them to walk with me and the particular political situation they were living in. So, for example, in Belfast, I walked with Bill Ralston, who's a fabulous sociologist who's done a lot of work on the murals in Belfast, who does walking tours, and then a biographical sociologist who's an American but has spent all of his working life in Belfast, so he's lived through times of strife and trouble and, you know, the darkest times in Belfast. And then through Bob, actually, a woman who was on the opposite end of the spectrum politically, to Michael Conlon, who was a former Sinn Féin councillor in North Belfast. So in Belfast, there was a sort of collection of people who, you know, represented different aspects of living in Belfast, including Bob at the university. I guess that kind of concept of, I mean, aside from, you know, our biographical reflections about borders and challenges, you know, both psychic and social and material and symbolic, you know, as a biographical sociologist. When I was in Vancouver doing a year's ethnographic work in the downtown east side, that it really struck me, well, I suppose the power of emotional, psychic borders, and particularly the impact of stigma on how one goes about one's life. So some of the residents of the downtown east side, so, you know, sort of Skid Row, who were either living in supported housing or in one case was homeless. It was really incredible to experience, in particular with one woman who felt she could not leave that square mile because, you know, she felt displaced outside of that. When I suggested going for a coffee, we had to stay within her zone of comfort.
These were both psychological within people's heads, but were they political boundaries as well that you were walking?
Absolutely, and Belfast is an example of that, but also the walk that I did in over a number of days, over 3 days, in Chios with the photographer John Perro Valaris. You know, both physical, fluid, and also deeply embedded in his own biographical, you know, rememberings. His grandparents were part of the population exchanges in 22, when Muslims and Christians were swapped, you know, so his grandparents came to Chios from Izmir in Turkey and had to start their life again. And that border, really, when you look at it, you know, it's a physical border, but it's also a watery border. And at the time we were there, you know, people were arriving in boats, crossing those very, you know, unsafe crossings. And so there was this, you know, incredible layering of the history of borders, but also, you know, the politics of borders. And interesting that, you know, the new arrivals were there in the same place as some of the refugees in the 20s, against the city walls, now in UN tents and with various aid workers supporting them. The politics of that was, the political borders were writ large.
And were you brought up in Belfast yourself? You said you had
no.
Some...
No, okay. My grandparents were migrants from Ireland, both north and south. But in terms of the kind of partisan nature of, you know, and I think there's some really amazing histories. You know, Colm Toyban's walk along the Irish border, incredible. The story of the conflict, but also, I guess, of the sort of similarities in people's lives as well.
Part of the joy of the walk and walking side by side are moments of silence, and those moments can last a very long time and yet feel some kind of closeness and relationship with that person. And that's hopeless when you're trying to record it in audio. So how did you capture it?
Sure. Well, first of all, I asked them to draw me a map. Not everyone did. Some did, some didn't. Some people wanted to just walk around and, you know, take me where they fancied at that time. Some had very specific walks in mind. Some had very specific walks and didn't draw a route. But so we used a sort of mixture of, well, always recording. So everything was recorded verbatim and then transcribed. And also photography. So, you know, people were, you know, my co-workers were, you know, I invited them also to take photographs of anything that was meaningful, that they wanted to take a visual image of, so that we had a visual record as well. I had my camera, so, you know, I was doing similar, and we took it in turns usually. Some of the walks were filmed. One walk in particular in London was filmed on December the 17th. Jan Harkin, who was over from the States, a filmmaker and activist and feminist. And so we translated a walk she had created in Portland in the streets of London, starting in Tavistock Square, actually. Not Mary Wollstonecraft. There isn't a Mary Wollstonecraft Memorial in London or anywhere.
Newington Green?
Yes, there should be. That's where the campaign is.
No, there isn't a memorial.
No, but the campaign, Mary on the Green.
And her grave is old St Pancras Churchyard. Yeah. But there's no monument
to her. There's no monument to her, which is incredible, isn't it? So there's a fabulous campaign, Mary on the Green, which are, you know, so the film supports that, really. So we ended at the memorial by Houses of Parliament to Sylvie Pinkers.
We're talking about man-made borders. We're not talking about sort of natural borders like ecological. You didn't choose anything like that. You chose a physical border.
I invited my participants to choose the walk and at the same time how that walk related to the project, you know, the focus of the project, which was borders, risk and belonging. And so my participants chose the sense of borders. But because of my interest in migration, a number of the walks connect to migration and some connect to sex work, around London, Soho, for example, and Liverpool. But the very first walk I did was with Chris Watson, who I would describe as a sound artist, and he would probably describe as a sound recordist. And that was a really fabulous walk around the island of Lindisfarne, or otherwise known as Holy Island. And that was really a very beautiful walk. So it was a kind of, you know, walking the boundary of the island, which is a tidal island, but also connecting through Chris's knowledge of the wildlife and bird life to the kind of migratory travels of various birds. And so that was very lovely. That was a very meditative walk.
Because you ask people to draw a map, and that's inviting people to set their own boundaries.
Yes.
Was that something that you found when you spoke to people, especially when you've been working with asylum seekers or migrants? Do you find that they create a kind of mental map of an area that they're familiar with and then set boundaries which they then find it difficult to overcome, even though we who are welcoming them or might not be welcoming actually don't acknowledge those boundaries?
It does make sense. So just to illustrate a project that I did a few years back with Jan, who's a filmmaker, in Teesside. We worked with a group of 10 asylum-seeking women, two of whom were undocumented. One had refugee status. We invited them to... it was very participatory, so we talked about how we might develop the work together. And so they did draw a map from a place they call home to a special place, which follows Misha's practice, that initial lovely project she did called Away From Home. And we asked them to mark on the map the places and spaces that were important to them for whatever reason. And that then gave us a sense of their everyday, you know, their everyday experiences and the borders and the barriers they experience. But at the same time, it also gave us an insight into their becoming citizens, you know, performing citizenship. They individually drew maps, and then we talked about the maps, and they decided that they wanted to do a collective walk. And so we collectively, as a group of women, two women academics, 10 women asylum seekers from Africa, Asia and the Middle East, an artist, and one of the women was setting up a local project for African asylum seeking refugee women in Stockton, former journalist from Sierra Leone, fabulous woman. They decided that they wanted a collective walk, and so it was very fluid, you know, in that we started at the police station because they felt, first of all, that this was, you know, a place that was really no one liked. No one slept before they went to sign at the police station. And, you know, so you kind of, sort of the film and also the photographs that the women took, you know, you have this very glossy police station with the women's, you know, sitting outside before we walk through the community venues they use, the food banks, the university, which is so important to for everyone. It was the library in the park in front of the library. That was a special place where they described feeling free.
Well, something I often talk about is about how gendered the city is and about how the way that cities have been designed for men, by men, for men, and that women have either had to be inconspicuous or they become very conspicuous. And I imagine walking as a group of 10 or 12 women of different colour, it might have been quite a... you must have been almost a performance in yourself.
Absolutely. It was an intervention. You know, it was both a sort of resistance to, you know, a kind of, performative intervention. But at the same time, women felt safer in a group. I called the police station before the day before to say that we were starting our walk there, because what I didn't want was, you know, officials coming outside to ask why we were hanging about the police station, you know, having had the experience before with a couple of unaccompanied young men standing outside a reporting centre in Loughborough on a walk where they were showing me their Loughborough. You know, I had the person who manages the centre come outside and ask us to move on. So, you know, I didn't want that experience, and also for them not to have, you know, not to feel that they had been, that they had, you know, at the start of our walk, they're being moved on, you know.
So you've done lots of research. You've done lots of walking. You went out on this research project called Walking Borders, and you were probably pretty well equipped and pretty well prepared. So what was the most surprising thing that...
It was all surprising, because I think, you know, there were surprising moments in every single walk, because, you know, I guess walking with somebody, you know, walking with another person, and you kind of, that the space for dialogue and remembering opens up. You obviously are in a very sort of attentive way when you're walking with another person. What is also brought up for yourself too? So I think the walks in Ireland, I had a walk in Cork with a fabulous sociologist called Linda Connolly, and it was a kind of women's history walk of Cork, starting at the maternity hospital, then going to the convent, the Magdalene Laundry. Along the road is the prison, the women's prison, and then a little bit further along is the asylum. And so, you know, and that surprised me, because I had no idea that symphysiotomies were occurring, that A, they were occurring in the West, and B, that, you know, right until the sort of 80s, you know, I had my first child in 84. And so, you know, this barbaric practice to avoid women having cesareans, because then they would only be able to have three babies, was happening in Ireland at that time. So I learned lots new in all of the walks. You know, lots of things were raised for me in all of the walks. But I think for that kind of connected me to the history of Ireland, you know, that kind of underside, really, the gendered politics, the gendered stuff. And also, of course, my own history.
Of all the walks that you've been invited to take, which two would you recommend that listeners should try for themselves?
No, all of them. But if I had to choose two, I was very excited doing the feminist walk in London with Jan Harkin and Nelly Stavranopoulou, who's a PhD student, who's working with me. And we traced Jan's walk. She developed this walk in Portland called the Walk of the Heroines. She developed a garden as well in her university. And we traced that walk in London, starting in Tavistock Gardens and ending up at the Sylvie Pankhurst Monument.
Okay, so that's one walk.
That's one walk. And then the other walk, the first walk was so powerful, being connected to nature and wildlife and the physical environment of Lindisfarne with Chris was just fabulous. The other walks, I want to say them all equally. A walk that was done in pouring rain in Vancouver, we walked the Women's Memorial March. And the Women's Memorial March takes place on the 14th of February every year. And it is basically a memorial, but it's also a protest and a demand, really, for action against violence against women, but particularly Indigenous women. And, you know, the whole history of... There's that whole history of missing and dead women in Vancouver. But sex workers, because I've, you know, worked on issues around sex work since 89, my first empirical research project, that's very close to my heart as well. So that one...
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. In this episode, you've heard from Maggie O'Neill. If you have any views on the interview or any walking issues, we'd love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the Talking Walking website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities Limited. Our artwork is designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music is composed by Simon Sanders of Easytronic.